A Pentecost Sunday Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on June 4, 1995, entitled, Dreams Don't Die. The texts for the sermon are Acts 2, verse 17, and John 20, verse 22. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Dreams don't die. That was something that I discovered in our Lenten pilgrimage. The theme about dreamers, the fact that dreams don't die, but dreamers do. And I think I had gone into that series somewhat discouraged by the fact that dreamers die, that we do our worst to those who represent our best. And yet by the end of Lent, I came to see that though dreamers do indeed die, dreams don't die. Oh, sometimes our dreams die, but they're more our personal dreams, and they're not unimportant, for they unleash our energy and engage our passion. But there are times when we lose our courage, or lose our vision, or lose our hope, a failure of nerve, and our dreams die. And we may live on then, but to live on is a lifeless thing when one lives without a dream. But I'm really thinking this morning about a bigger dream, the big dream, the dream in the heart of God, that dream in the heart of God for a world the way God intended it to be, a world that is filled with human compassion, living before the face of God, reveling in grace and love, a human community which is characterized by justice and openness and freedom, which is full of grace, reflective of the grace of God. That's the big dream. It seems to me that the whole biblical tradition would point us to that dream in the heart of God. It's the dream of a world different than anything that we've known. It is a dream, however, that has always come to expression again and again. It came to expression in the Hebrew prophets. The prophet who sang of a world in which the lion and the lamb would lie down together and they would not hurt or destroy in all God's holy mountain, where every child would live out his days and there would be peace, shalom. It came to expression in some difficult days in Israel's experience when they had known oppression. The prophet Joel was raised up and he sang of the day of the Lord, the day that would come when God would pour out God's Spirit in fullness, and old men would dream dreams, and young men would see visions. Men and women, sons and daughters, would all together be moved by the Spirit of God. And in that day, the prophet says, all who call on the name of the Lord would be saved. And that dream came to expression most fully in Jesus. That was really our Lenten pilgrimage. The dream embodied in the life of that one who lived faithful to the dream until they crucified him. But God would not allow the human no through his yes. Jesus was raised up and on Easter evening gathered those disciples around him. And he said, peace be with you. And he breathed on them and said, receive the Spirit of God. For as God has sent me, so send I you. And he instructed them to wait and to pray until power come upon them from on high. And that's the day of Pentecost. That is the historical event that launched the Jesus movement, which has become the Christian church. And every 50 days after Easter, we still gather and we wear red and we sing of the Spirit of God, the breath of God, the wind of God, the power of God, the presence of God, and the peace of God, the engagement of God with our lives, the touching of our earth by heaven, the movement of God in our lives and in our community. Praise erupted from their lips, ecstatic speech They went out into the streets, as the children were told a moment ago. So much so, because the spirit is a spirit of disorder. As an aside, I might say that we always pride ourselves in the church that we do things decently and in order, and to that extent we know not the Spirit of God. For the Spirit is a spirit of disorder, full of surprises, unruly. And they were so unruly that day that people looked at them and pointed and said they must be drunk. And Peter couldn't countenance that, so he stood up and said, "Look, they're not drunk, it's not even happy hour yet." He said, "They're intoxicated." But they're intoxicated with the Spirit of God. They have enthusiasm, a word which comes from two Greek words, in theos, in God. If you are in God, or if God is in you, you are enthusiastic. And you act intoxicated, drunk with God. That's the norm of Pentecost. And so he stood up and he began to tell them what they were experiencing. And he pointed to the prophet Joel. And then he said, "This is that." Ah, that's a bold claim, Peter. This that you see happening is that of which the prophet spoke. How do you know, Peter? How can you be so sure, Peter? That is a bold claim, Peter. This babbling enthusiasm, this is that great day of the Lord. Peter, how do you know that this is that? Well, the Christian movement was launched, and nothing of significance has ever been launched which was not launched by one who believed that the wind of God was blowing through her. Nothing of significance has ever happened in humankind except by one who believed that the vision and the dream was given by God. But it scares me a bit, because on the other hand, isn't it also true that the greatest atrocities of human history have been perpetrated by those who have claimed that God spoke to them? How do you know, Peter? For example, in yesterday's Grand Rapids Press, there is an article, "Their Theology, Key to Understanding White Supremacist Actions." And in this brief article, it tells about some of those radical groups on the fringe of the far right, the militias and the neo-Nazi groups. And as I read the article, I couldn't help but think about today's message. One man in prison for 190 years says, "I am the symbol that is going to stop the Judeo-American murder of the white race." And then the author says, tuning out the voices of right-wing extremists is tempting, particularly when they adopt the language of faith. But religion, whether a little-known tradition called Christian identity or a radical strain of Mormonism or anything else, is a prime motivator of groups on the right-wing fringe. Their belief systems drive racial hatred and define a world of the saved and the damned. They provide justification for violent acts against Jews, blacks, homosexuals, and the federal government. And the article goes on to say that the land is rife with groups like that. And the most powerful motivator in the world is religion. And there has been no such movement that has had any power or puts the world in any peril but what its founder has said, "God has spoken to me." and the fact that God has spoken with that kind of absolutism, spoken with that kind of dogmatism, seems to draw people and bring them to the point of ultimate sacrifice, where they'll lay their bodies on the funeral pyre if need be. And so when Peter says, this is that, I want to say, just a minute, Peter. How do you know? How can you be so bold? The prophets sang of a new world, and suddenly the Spirit of God falls in fullness, and you say, this is it. And yet it is true, as I said a moment ago. No great movement has ever been launched. Nothing of great significance has ever been accomplished, except a people or a leader believe that God has spoken, that the dream and the vision derives from the heart of God. That's what Pentecost is all about. The movement of God who inspires people to follow the way of Jesus, who had embodied the dream of God, the dream in the heart of God. I suppose it's only by their fruits that ye shall know them, as Jesus said. Acknowledging the ambiguity, acknowledging our vulnerability to getting our own egos and our own ideas intertwined with the purposes of God. Is it not true as well of us that except we believe that the Spirit of God is calling us, except we dare to dream a vision, dream a dream and see a vision, and be moved by that same wind of God, nothing great will be accomplished. It seems to me that 125 years ago in this place, there were a people who believed in the dream and began to worship together and founded a community. And a quarter of a century ago, it was like a new day of Pentecost when the foundations were shaken, and a new day of grace, and the community of compassion was born. And then, it wasn't so long ago that we began to speak of Christ's community as an alternative to church as usual. Because we began to see that the church had stifled the dream with all of its institutional baggage, with all of its structures and forms, with all of its creeds and confessions, and all of its polity, all of its vested interest. The church itself had become not the launching pad of the dream, but its tomb. And so we began to speak here of being an alternative to church as usual. Was it a dream that God gave? Was it a vision that the Spirit offered? Were we being beckoned by God to be something new? All these years, I've thought I only had one string on my banjo. That was the string of grace. And I believe that in all these years, we have become a gracious community. But I discovered that there's another string there. I just wrote an article which was published in Perspectives, the magazine on which I'm on the board of editors for now this past decade. It was an article that pleads with the Christian church to be open to revision some of its most cherished doctrines in order that in this scary world of ours. And as I was working on that article, I thought, you know, when I was in the Netherlands working on my dissertation, I did some work on this. And so I went to my cupboard and I dug through a big pile of research notes and notebooks until I found the notebook with the passages. And I actually lifted them out and faxed them to my secretary and said, type them up. And she typed them up and they found their way into the article and they are now in print. And then on Memorial Day, when it was too miserable to do anything but to do some awful work, I went through my files and I came across the Western Theological Seminary Reform Review, a quarterly magazine, which published an article that I gave in 1972. And as I leafed through that, being deeply moved by its brilliance, I was horrified to find the same two paragraphs that I had just published in 1995. They're already published. I plagiarized myself. Obviously, I am really impressed with what once I wrote. But you know, it was a moment of self-awareness for me, because I did realize that I have been about one thing, and that is the translation of the Christian tradition in order that it might be heard by people of our day. Because you see, I believe in the truth of the gospel. And I believe if we could strip off the barnacles of the church and if we could unwrap that liberating message of Jesus and if we could allow the power of God through His Spirit once more to burst forth through us, this world could be turned upside down. Because the truth is there. Jesus modeled it out. The dream of God. The dream that came to expression in Hebrew prophets and embodied in Jesus and has found expression down through the centuries. Lately, 50 years ago, in our own Dietrich Bonhoeffer, as we noted on Palm Sunday, that dream, once given expression, once set forth again in the marketplace of ideas, will move people, will transform people. It is the dream of God. The dream gets so beset with so much that is so trivial and unimportant. The synods of the churches will be meeting again in these next weeks. And they will argue and they will debate while the world burns. Things that don't matter. Oh, dear friends. God knows, I believe, God calls us to think, and to think anew, and to think seriously, and to wrestle with the truth of the gospel and bring it to fresh expression. And I think if there's one thing Christ's community can do, it is that. But that's not enough. We must think rightly in order that we may act faithfully. And this grace that we have received must become grace in action. We need to become a people center. We need to have a people center where this community can come and find concretely the compassion of Jesus Christ, the love of God, the healing of their wounds, the salving of their sores, the comforting of their souls. We need to help them in every way that they need to be helped. We need to unleash this community into the larger community in order that the grace and love of God may become tangible in the touch of God's people to those who are in need. Last night over the lake, beautiful crescent moon. Not a new moon, but we call it a new moon. But it's another phase of the same moon. It's Pentecost, 1995. 125 years from the old First Reformed Church of Spring Lake's founding. 25 years since the birth of Christ's community. Is it not time to dream a new dream, the same old dream, but now for the 21st century? Is it not time for us to think with responsibility and to act with faithfulness? becoming the agents of God's compassion and grace to this community. Peter said, this is that. And I'm tempted to say, this is it. But I know that there's a lot of me in that. And so discount that. But might it not be, as I look into your faces, what potential, what resource? I'm so glad that the prophet Joel, repeated by the preacher Peter, said that old men would dream dreams. Because I worry a little bit about being an old man when there's so many of you who are young, who didn't know 25 years ago what it was to be a part of an eruption of the Spirit of God. I wish you could taste it too, but why not? Old men can dream dreams. Can it happen again and again and again? Are you ready to move out? Will you dream with me? You see, because to have a dream is to live. To have a dream is more important than that the dream come true. Because it's not for us to say whether the dream will come true. The dream will come true at God's will, according to God's time, according to God's power. We are to be available and to be open. But will you dream with me? Will you open your lives anew to some dramatic, new, wonderful movement of the God Spirit that would change and transform the face of the earth? Will you dream with me? If you dream, you live. And if the dream comes true or not, you've lived the dream. And to dream, that's to live. It's to have something to live for. It's to have something to die for. Following our own narrow pursuit of pleasure soon grows stale, but being called to something beyond ourselves, that is to become ourselves most fully to the glory of God. The dream won't die, and God calls for dreamers.